Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Rules of Pain by Elizabeth Lynx, narrated by Samantha Cook and Tor Tom. Prologue.
You are fired.
I stared into his dark eyes and curled my fingers into my palms until I thought I felt skin break. That's when I stood from the cracked pleather stool, leaned over his wobbly pine desk, and pointed at his face. It took all my willpower not to wave goodbye to his droopy, jowly face with my fist. No, you're fired! I sprayed the words at him, causing his cheeks to glisten. I was angry, pissed that my life had come to this. Where was the dream job at the big company with the corner office that I imagined in college for myself? I'll be 30 in a few months, and I have nothing to show for it. I don't believe my fantasy career path involved being fired as a cashier at a crappy coffee shop. And while I'm thinking about my dream life, where was the knight that captured my heart, who took me on an epic ride and fell at my feet at night? Trevor, my boyfriend, took me on rides in his car, but a beat-up 05 Toyota Corolla with rust patches wasn't my idea of magical. I certainly didn't consider our one drive to Milwaukee to go on a beer-tasting tour as the ride of my life. As for being a knight in shining armor, the most Trevor had ever done to sweep me off my feet was when he took me to Chili's Bar and Grill because he had a coupon. My boss, correction, former boss, Ed, stood from his overstuffed, overdone swivel chair to his full height, all 5 feet 5 inches of him, exactly 1 inch taller than me.
What? You can't fire me. I'm your boss. I'm firing you. Now get out, Ms. Drake.
Ed's stubby arm waved at the door directly behind me in his puny office that was coated in years of dust. I glanced down at the stained carpet, once a vivid burgundy, but now aged to a fine rosewood, if someone had puked rosewood. Looking up, I realized his face matched the carpet, so I began to laugh, and I couldn't stop.
What's so funny, Ms. Drake? You've been fired after only working here for 4 months. If anything, that's sad. Pathetic, really. My 12-year-old nephew does a better job at the register here in the coffee shop than you do.
He's right. His nephew was a smart kid, a bit weird and sleazy, but a hard worker. I came here every day of my shift on time and did my work. But that was it. I never gave a little extra or came up with exciting ideas to help the coffee shop because I didn't care about this place. I sucked. My sides hurt as I doubled over in laughter at the realization. It's not like I was in love with working the register at Wake Up Joe's and disappointed that I didn't try harder. No, if anything, I felt thankful, grateful I didn't have to see this place ever again. As appreciative as I was when Trevor put in a good word to Ed to get me this job a while back, I'm beginning to wonder if I should have focused more on finding my dream job, the one with the potential for that corner office. The one at the company I had set my eyes on back in college, but was too much of a coward ever to apply. Now that I don't even have a cashier job, maybe it was about time I took a risk. Gave me a thrill because this job wasn't cutting it anyway. And Trevor was okay in the bedroom, but he was the least thrilling person I knew. I needed something exciting. A challenge. A job where my boss wasn't a pervert with a pee fetish, but a person who respected my ideas and appreciated my effort. It had been 8 years since I graduated. It was time I had something I could call a career. I'm laughing, Ed, because you are the sad one. Do you think I don't know about your peephole in the ladies' restroom? Yeah, I saw the pathetic hole that happens to come out the other side right here. I maneuver around the boxes of paperwork he had that lined the floor. A painting of a pirate with a patch over one eye was hanging on the wall. The other eye was the hole. His anger-fueled face sagged as every ounce of Ed's carpet-colored tone drained.
I had no idea that was there.
His head bobbed around the room, searching for the remnants of his dignity.
Look, maybe we could discuss this.
Save it, Ed. I already told all the ladies who work here. I suggest you keep it in your pants and cover that hole, as the ladies are itching to report you.
And you were right, I sighed as the creases in his brow deepened.
I am terrible at this job, but that's because I don't want to work here anymore. Perhaps you are doing me a favor by firing me.
He nodded and tried to reach over to offer me his hand to shake. I frowned.
No thanks. Once I got out on the street, reality hit me like a cold slap of the Lake Michigan breeze. Dreams of excellent jobs at big companies are one thing, but getting hired required tenacity, intelligence, and a great first impression. While I thought of myself as smart and determined, I didn't know if a future boss, especially one at my dream company, would believe that after gazing at my resume. Hopping from low-paying job to low-paying job didn't scream astute or dependable. As for first impressions, that's not a strength of mine. I once passed out in the sand after throwing up on myself when I saw Oprah walking along Lake Michigan. My best friend, Aria, who took care of me after I fainted, told me later it wasn't even Oprah, just a tourist from Oklahoma who was dipping her toes into the water. Maybe now wasn't the time to apply to Mimir, the third largest internet retail company. A place that I first salivated over in college when I read about the founder, Jacob Mimir, a Chicago native who started the business in his mom's garage and eventually built it into a multi-billion-dollar company. That took guts, and he was wise enough to surround himself with the best. Part of me wanted to be like him, come up with a great plan that turned something small and local into a giant business. In the article I read in Chicago Business Today, he mentioned that his company thrived due to the intelligent and forward-thinking people he employed, that if it weren't for his brother Edgar and his good friend Henrik Payne, Mimir would have floundered in its early days. It's obvious Mimir only hired the finest in their field. I tapped at the glass on my phone and brought up my resume. What I saw stopped me in the middle of the sidewalk. It was worse than I thought. I realized I'm far from the best. Hell, I'm not even mediocre. The words on my resume didn't lie. I hoped, more like I lived in denial, that there was something on there that stood out. But there was nothing. Being a nanny to the baby of the dean of the University of Chicago didn't scream business background. Or when I organized that walk to help save a local landmark, the first bakery opened in Chicago. That required hard work, but I did it for very selfish reasons. My love and admiration for cake. One hand gripped my phone in defeat, while the other clung to the collar of my navy peacoat as I lifted my head toward the heart-stopping, salivating smell of my usual hangout, Got Cake Bakery. My eyes longingly swept over the beautifully crafted confections as I walked by the window. The baked goods used their siren song to try and pull me inside. But I continued on my path toward the L train. My pennies now required an excellent pinching, so I settled on texting my roommate and best friend since college, Aria, instead of ordering my usual assortment of cake slices. On my way home, got fired. Any leftover cake at home? It didn't take long for her to respond. I had just gone through the L turnstile and was racing up the steps to the Red Line train when I felt my phone buzz in my coat pocket.
Trevor was a loser anyway. What did he say to get you fired?
It was going to be a few minutes until the Red Line train heading north arrived, so I took a seat on the bench to respond.
Just because you don't like Trevor, don't assume it was his fault. My boss hated me and made up something about a missing bag of coffee beans. Blamed it on me. Plus, I sucked. I need to find a real job.
Aria responded instantly.
You don't suck. I mean, you probably do, with men, suck real good, but that's a different conversation. It was that coffee shop that sucked. Once you're home, I'll give you my special Aria remedy.
I groaned.
I knew precisely what her remedy was, watching porn.
It's one thing to watch porn with your boyfriend, but when you watch it with your platonic best friend, it gets weird. I loved my best friend, but the woman was oversexed. To her, sex was entertainment to the point where she watched internet porn for comedy, like binge-watching a favorite 90s sitcom. When I finally made it to our fifth-floor apartment, I flung myself onto our second-hand couch with a moan.
"There, there, little Red. I found some cake in the freezer. There are some patches of freezer burn, but you can always cut them away," Arya said as she placed the white ceramic plate topped with a chocolate slice of cake onto our nicked oak coffee table.
I should have seen it coming. Her cake bribery knew no bounds. And like the dejected fool I was, I fell for it.
"I need cake so much right now. You're a good friend."
She inched next to me as I sat up and brought the plate to my chest. One of the advantages of having big boobs was that they can act as a table sometimes. When my eyes lifted after placing the first morsel of chocolatey, freezer-burnt cake into my mouth, I noticed Arya had her laptop open and was clicking on a porn site. Once she saw me watching her, she quickly closed the computer.
"Come on, Arya, I'm trying to enjoy this cake. I don't want to throw it up."
I knew she used the cake to distract me, knowing I was incapacitated when the cake was near my mouth. Arya knew I would have locked myself in my room if she had tried this without cake.
"I want you to see this one video. That's it. In fact, it's not even that good, and the woman is mostly out of the shot half the time."
There was something in her dark brown eyes. A twinkle, maybe. Whatever it was, it seemed sly. Like she was doing this on purpose. The thing about Arya, she rarely did mysterious. She only did mysterious when she felt it was something important. I can't imagine she believed watching porn with her best friend was vital. When she ran her fingers through her wispy platinum blonde hair, I knew something was up.
"Then why show it to me if it's that bad?" I had to ask, quickly drawn into her porn trickery.
She bit her bottom lip and sat up straight.
"It's important that you see this. I've been debating since last night to show this to you, and now with you fired, I don't know."
Damn her. Now I was curious.
"Show it to me, Arya," I said and began to reach for her laptop on the coffee table before she covered my hand with hers. "If I show this to you, promise you won't start having conversations with your brain again, or any of your other body parts?"
I frowned. It had been months since I did that. After my parents' neighbors called the police because a crazy red-headed woman was wandering the neighborhood having lively conversations with herself, my family and Arya had an intervention. I had just fought with Trevor at my parents' Independence Day barbecue and decided that a walk around the neighborhood would help calm me down. I didn't think anyone could hear me debate the pros and cons of dating Trevor. Besides, Brain helped me realize that despite Trevor being cheap and not paying attention to me as much as I would have liked, I did have good taste in men.
"I told you I stopped doing that," I said, but refused to look Arya in the eye.
She sighed.
"Fine. Just know that you can talk to me if you want. An actual living, breathing human and not just a body part."
My eyes sliced to her and she nodded, lifting the screen. After a few clicks of her mouse, the video came alive, and my mouth went dry. I recognized Trevor's Rush poster and his usual grunts of pleasure.
"Oh my God." My voice trailed off as I saw our sex life displayed on gettingyourpornon.com.
After a few moments, Arya closed the laptop, and I could feel the warmth of her hand curl over my shoulder. All the heat had drained from my body as I sat staring like a cold, dead fish.
"I'm sorry, but I felt you had to know."
My eyes remained focused on the place where the screen had been, where my lackluster love life had been displayed in grainy clarity. I nodded. She was right. And I did need to know.
"Give me a minute," I said and stood, slowly making my way down the hall of our apartment to my bedroom.
Once inside, I shut and leaned back against the white-painted door.
"Brain,
We need to talk, I said.
1. Payne's Rule. Work before play and have a rich life. She's the last. I only partially heard what Evelyn Beckman, the head of HR, was blathering on about. With my usual nod and flick of my hand to indicate she could leave my office now, I went back to tapping at the new app on my phone. It wasn't working, and that was a big problem. What if shipments weren't sent, or orders were never placed? Mimir would take a hit. We'd lose ground in the very competitive online retail market. Edgar oversold this damn thing, I said, and was surprised by a gasp on the other side of my desk. My eyes lifted to find Evelyn still standing there, her usual pale, lifeless cheeks turning a charming pink. I never thought I would use the word charming and Evelyn in the same sentence, but there's a first time for everything. You're still here. Why are you still here? Evelyn pursed her lips, causing her face to appear to be moments from ripping apart, due to the tight blonde schoolmarm-like chignon she wore. For a moment, her cold as a Chicago sidewalk and winter facade slipped, and I saw a statuesque beauty staring at my phone. She cleared her throat and pulled back up her steely mask. The executive assistant candidate? The last one is waiting outside for her interview. Reschedule. I have to speak to Edgar about this new app immediately. I'm sure his tech geeky head loves to reconfigure programs or whatever it is he does as head of IT. But for me, I paused to reach over and pull out a piece of cinnamon gum from my desk drawer. It took a few hearty tugs, but the sticky drawer finally gave, and I was chewing in no time. For me, as head of sales and marketing here at Mimir, this is a nightmare. Jacob isn't going to scream at his baby brother Edgar. He's going to yell at me. I didn't even need to lift my eyes from my phone to know Evelyn wore a smirk as she sighed. As much as I would love to hear Mr. Mimir chew you out, Payne, I still need to do my job. Unfortunately, that means helping you find an assistant. All the muscles in my jaw tightened. I don't need an assistant. I can do this all by myself. I knew I was unreasonable. What vice president, who is in charge of the part of the company that makes it over $1 billion a year, doesn't need support? No decent business person would say no to an assistant to help with the day-to-day tasks. Evelyn's deep, throaty chuckle might attract a different type of man, someone only interested in beauty, but I knew the woman. Her laugh felt like nails slowly scraping down a chalkboard. Now, every muscle in my body was tense. Oh, Payne, that was the best laugh I've had all day. Now, here is her resume. She lifted a piece of paper from the leather folder she was holding and pushed it toward me on my desk. As you can see, she's helped support the Dean of the University of Chicago, so she's used to dealing with a wide variety of people. And hey, Evelyn paused as her lips curved into a cartoonish grin. Maybe she's dealt with a few assholes in her time there. That way she would know exactly how to deal with you. Evelyn turned and purposely sashayed, with ass bounce and all, toward my office door. Just before leaving, she turned and gave me the most devilish grin. I could feel the bile rise in my throat. No wonder her nickname is Bitch of HR. Okay, maybe I was the only one who said that about her, but it didn't stop it from being true. She hated me. Most people hated me. It hadn't always been like that. But it's not my problem if people can't handle the truth. Because life, reality, truth, whatever you want to call it, hurts. The best thing anyone can do is keep their nose down, work hard, and maybe one day you can think about happiness. One day. I may need an assistant, but all the people I had interviewed were barely qualified for the job. I required someone who could put up with my attitude. Yes, I admit, Evelyn was right. I was an asshole. But assholes get shit done. The assistant doesn't need to only put up with me, but can handle unique and high-pressure situations. Think on their feet. And all the other usual executive assistant stuff. I doubt that Miss Drake would happen to be the diamond that sparkled in a sea of turd applicants. Rubbing my face, I went back to my phone and tried to narrow down the bug. Mr. Payne? I could hear Eveline put on her professional I'm not a bitch voice and knew she was guiding the interviewee inside. I have your 2 o'clock, Miss Morgana Drake. There was some shuffling, but I kept my eyes glued to my phone until I felt hot breath tickle my ear. Eveline began to whisper to me, Payne, I am warning you that if you don't choose an assistant soon, you will be getting Grace, the receptionist, for the foreseeable future. You know how she has been begging for this job. My hand froze mid-swipe as a twitch got the better of my right eye. Oh, God. Anyone but Grace. Putting the phone down, I lifted my head to find Eveline watching me. As she stood back to her full height, I answered, Thank you, Miss Beckman. I will consider that. The gleam in her gaze was like a middle finger. She moved back around my desk toward the person seated in the chair waiting for me to interview her. I was about to open my mouth and give Eveline a taste of her own medicine when my eyes finally settled on the woman seated on the opposite side of my desk. Miss Morgana Drake. At that moment, I wondered if my lungs had collapsed as I felt the wind being knocked out of me. My mouth dried, almost disintegrated onto my desk, as I tumbled deep into the golden green gulf of her eyes. Blinking, I shook my head, remembering I was at work, admiring her pouty lips, her thick red hair, or, oh man, her cleavage, was the last thing I should be doing. Henrik Payne, you're better than that. I was not some superficial man-whore. Women weren't on the agenda. I worked too hard to entertain having someone of the opposite sex in my life, other than as a platonic friend. And as I stared at Miss Drake, the last thing on my mind was platonic. If this woman became my assistant, then she was off limits. It didn't matter that she wore a low-cut green blouse that accentuated her curves, tight gray blazer, and a very short matching skirt. I had to remain focused on this job. Why did my body have this reaction? I'd experienced my fair share of attractive women, but I had never wanted to introduce Captain Cock with such immediate intimacy. It's probably a mid-career crisis that caused my body to search for a release. I was 34, after all. While that wasn't midlife, or even an age that most people consider to be mid-career, by most standards, I felt much older most of the time. A few occasions I caught a glimpse of myself in the mirror and wondered why my father was staring back at me. Maybe I needed a distraction outside of work, like tennis or lion taming. Her resume, that would help. Once I saw that she's as incompetent as the other applicants, I'll lose total interest. But when I lifted the paper, the only weakness I could find was she put cake as one of her qualifications. Cake, huh? I asked. I almost regretted the peachy color of her cheeks, draining from my question, but I had to see how she would handle me picking out the least interview-worthy topic. If she expected to be my assistant, then she had to handle unforeseen events with ease. As I suspected, Miss Drake may look good on paper, but even a simple question about cake stumped her. It more than confused her. She fainted. I raced over and managed to wrap my arms around her warm, soft body before her head hit the floor. The scent of lavender and honey caused me to groan. I resisted the urge to bury my nose in her thick, fiery hair while I lifted her. I brought her over to my black leather couch and gently laid her down. For the first time in days, I smiled. Miss Drake looked peaceful and so breathtakingly beautiful this close-up. I felt like the prince in Sleeping Beauty, ready to lean in and give her the kiss that would bring her back to me. But this wasn't a fairy tale, so I sighed and brushed a few strands of hair that had fallen over her soft brow. Perhaps it was my touch that woke her as her eyes fluttered open. Turning her head to take me in, I was about to explain what had happened, but she stopped me. You asked about cake. During my brief time working at the bakery, got cake while I was in college. I learned about many different types of cake. I came to appreciate their unique flavors. Some were meant to be light, perhaps served after a heavy meal, while others were decadent. I held up my hands. Whoa, Miss Drake, you just passed out. Perhaps we should reschedule the interview.
I'm fine, Mr. Payne.
I tried to get up, but Miss Drake fisted my lapels and pulled me toward her. It's all right, Miss Drake. I'll ask. She bolted up from the couch, which caused me to tumble back onto the cushions. Miss Drake wobbled to the beige chair by my desk and sat staring at my empty seat on the other side of the desk. I shook my head and decided if she wanted the interview, I was going to show her what it was like to work for me. Taking my seat, I picked up my phone and began to play with the new Mimir app again. Miss Drake, we rolled out a new app for the company today. It's supposed to make it much easier for customers to purchase their items. However, it's making it more difficult, adding steps for the customer to do instead of streamlining the process. What would you do? This wasn't a problem for an assistant of mine. The most I would typically ask her would be to get Edgar Mimir on the phone, but I had to see how she reacted. Something about this woman made me want to push her buttons, to discover what surprises she had for me. I couldn't help but notice the substantial rise and fall of her chest as she took in the enormity of my question. The most I expected, having already experienced lackluster responses from easier questions by the other candidates, was a mumble of buzzwords, or perhaps crying, or she might even faint again. What happened was so startling that I was the one who didn't know how to respond. First, I would test each main menu, perhaps pick an item to purchase to see if it happens everywhere on the platform, and not just in certain places, taking heavy notes of what was going wrong. Then, I would write up a detailed report of what I would need from the application and what was occurring. I would take that report to Mr. Edgar Mimir and set up a time to meet with him to discuss this with you, assuming I was your assistant, of course. I stared at her and quickly closed my mouth. During her speech, my jaw relaxed and my mouth fell open. Yes, very good. Well then. I stood. No, that's not right. I stumbled to my feet, grabbed my phone, her resume, and said, excuse me. That's when I left. I made my way down the hall to HR, determined to tell Evelyn that I didn't need an assistant after all. Stay firm on my decision from earlier. I already work 60 hours a week. I'm flexible. I could comfortably fit in 10 or 20 more hours a week. Who needed help? Not this executive. I placed my hands on the door to the Human Resources Department, and suddenly, Evelyn's words floated in my head. I am warning you that if you don't choose an assistant soon, you will be getting Grace, the receptionist, for the foreseeable future. You know how she has been begging for this job. Taking a deep, soul-searching breath, I flung open the door with the knowledge of what I had to do about the executive assistant position. Perhaps I'll get lucky, and Miss Drake won't accept the job offer.
2. Morgana's problem. Her vibrator. Colorful but smooth, I lifted the clear glass to watch the colors bleed into each other. I wanted a drink that reminded me of art, Arya said from the other side of the bar. Her brown eyes sparkled in the reflected light from the glassware around the bar. I couldn't help but notice how the men sitting at the bar went through their drinks at a rapid pace so that they could request her presence once again. Arya Dixon had the face and body of an angel, including a halo of platinum blonde hair, but the mind of a sensual devil. Her high cheekbones and large brown eyes had men stumbling over themselves to talk to her, and she ate it up. I don't blame her. If men fell over themselves for me, I might see a little more action. But as it stands, since I dumped Trevor, I'm as lonely as a discarded broken lamp on a city street corner. She leaned over and pointed at the red liquid that bled into the yellow and the blue like drops of rain invading each layer. Like a watercolor. I'm thinking of naming it the David Taylor. I frowned, placing the glass back on the bar. Who's David Taylor? Arya glared at me. What? You're the artist, not me. Most people won't know who David Taylor is. If you expect...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?